Radio Prague News. Domestic violence is the most widespread form of violence in the Czech Republic. The new justice minister is preparing an overhaul of the Legislative Council. And former political prisoners say one of the guards who beat them up in prison is now a deputy for the Communist Party. Domestic violence is the most widespread form of violence in the Czech Republic, a police psychologist reported on Wednesday. A recent opinion poll conducted by the STEM agency suggests that 13% of the population have experienced physical harassment and mental torture. According to the Bílý kruh bezpečí victim support group, 3 in 5 domestic violence cases occur in middle and high-class families. A new law, which will come into effect in January, is expected to help reduce domestic violence as it introduces stricter measures against oppressors. Justice Minister Jiří Pospíšil says he's preparing an overhaul of the Legislative Council and the Justice Ministry. Mr. Pospíšil, who at 31 is the youngest member of the new minority Civic Democrat cabinet, said he wanted to infuse new blood into the sector and would replace part of the Legislative Council with young and dynamic experts in their 30s. He said personnel changes would also be made at the Justice Ministry, but would not disclose any details. Former political prisoners say that one of the guards who beat them up in prison is now a deputy for the Communist Party. The official in question is reportedly MP Josef Vondruška, who worked as a guard in the Minkovice prison in North Bohemia from 1972 to 1990. Former dissident Jiří Wolf, who was imprisoned there for political reasons in the 70s, told the Mladá fronta Dnes daily that Vondruška had beaten him up daily when he was on hunger strike. Vondruška has dismissed the allegations as nonsense, saying he had behaved in accordance with the law. The Prague Castle administration has officially handed over the management of St. Vitus's Cathedral, located in the castle grounds, to the Roman Catholic Church. The Prague City Court ruled in June of this year that St. Vitus Cathedral at Prague Castle belongs to the Roman Catholic Church and not the state, upholding an earlier verdict by a Prague district court. The church and the state have been fighting over ownership rights for over 13 years. A 1954 government resolution gave Prague Castle the authority to manage the cathedral and surrounding property, but the court decided that the transfer of management did not automatically imply a transfer of ownership. The state plans to appeal at the Supreme Court. And for EU newcomers, the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary and Slovakia have said that they wanted to enter the borderless Schengen zone according to an agreed schedule next year, despite calls from Brussels to postpone the move. Czech Foreign Minister Alexander Vondra said that all 4 member states had agreed to work together to try and maintain the original date, October 2007, or at least to negotiate in a way as to ensure that blame for any delay does not fall on the 4 countries. EU diplomats have called for postponement because of delays in building a new police database. I'm Dita Asiedu, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, and I'm Linda Maštarić. In today's program, a controversial new internet game aims to interest young people in the notorious World War II era Lidice massacre. A wing within the Communist Party of Bohemia Moravia is pushing for reform, and a famous road bike race between the Czech Republic and Austria is set to kick off. And later in today's show, Spotlight with Dita Asiedu takes us to the Mendel Museum in Brno. The sound of explosions from a controversial new internet game called Total Burnout of Lidice. The title refers to the 1942 razing of the Czech village of Lidice and the massacre of its inhabitants, one of the worst single atrocities of the World War II era. Visitors to the site are given the mission of burning the village down, with 10 points for killing a Czech, 50 if they are trying to escape. It seems to be in shocking bad taste, but it actually has a serious purpose. Attempt to start, and you are asked, What are you playing at? This is not a game, but reality. This is followed by a link to the Lidice Memorial website. The contentious site was made by Jan Benar, the head of the Czech branch of advertising agency McCann Erickson. Ian Willoughby asked him what he was trying to achieve.
The idea was, I mean, we were shocked that a lot of teenagers and young people don't know Lidice at all. They spend a lot of time behind the computer, so what we wanted to do is use their world of computer games where everything is possible and shock them and intrigue them to go and see Lidice, a place where real horror happened.
What reason do you have for thinking that young people today don't know about the massacre?
There is a lot of research that's available that shows that basically anything that's 10 years or older than 10 years is an unknown entity to a gross proportion of the teenagers.
And do you think that they really need to be shocked into thinking about history and events like the massacre of Lidice?
No, I think if media in general and by and large media and the education community would be focusing on places like Lidice or Terezin or any other monuments reminding of the history by themselves, we wouldn't need to shock anyone. But it is only when you create and provoke a discussion on that subject that the discussion in fact takes place.
There has been some negative reaction. I know one survivor of the 1942 massacre of Lidice, the local mayor, Václav Zelenka, he described it as perverse. What's your reaction to what he says?
No, I do apologize if we had any feelings. That wasn't the intention. The intention was clearly to invite teenagers, talk to them in their language and provoke them into knowing at least what Lidice is, perhaps grabbing a book, reading a bit about history, because as we all know, if people forget about history, it can repeat itself.
What has been the general reaction to the game?
I think general reaction from the community that that I am in is one of surprise and liking, because people understand that the point comes very clearly across when you see the click rate going from zero to, I think, 12,000 was the last count. In 2 days, this is a lot of visitors for one web page, and this is a lot of publicity for Lidice and for the good things that are happening in Lidice now.
The website Total Burnout of Lidice leads to the memorial site. Do you know if their site has had more visitors in recent days?
I didn't check on that, but I would presume so.
Did you discuss this issue with them at much length before launching the site? I mean, with the people from Lidice's memorial, the memorial?
We shared it with even with the people that were creating the multimedia exhibition in Lidice. Of course, they were shocked at first, but then we managed to convince them that this is the most efficient approach, given there is no money for the project, and if they want to bring Lidice back into life of teenagers in Czech Republic.
Jan Benar there, speaking with our own Ian Willoughby. And just a reminder, you're listening to Radio Prague. The past 3 months of complicated government talks have shown just how much the country's past is still affecting the present. The Communist Party's unwillingness to reform itself to a large extent distorts the Czech political scene. The Czech Green Party and the Christian Democrats, who would both be natural candidates for a center-left coalition elsewhere in Europe, are seen as parties right of center because they want nothing to do with the communists. A reform of the Communist Party would clearly benefit everyone, including the communists themselves. But can they do it? Daniela Lazarova has the story.
16 years after the fall of communism, the Communist Party is still largely unreformed and haunted by the past. Although the communists have been accepted at grassroots level and local administration, inviting them to join the government is still a big taboo. The only other party on the left, the Social Democrats, lean on them for support in negotiations with right-wing parties, but there can be no question of open cooperation. Jiří Dolejš, deputy chairman and one of the relatively young pro-reform party members, says it is time to step out of the Social Democratic Party's shadow and work on giving the Communist Party more credibility. He has called for an extraordinary party conference to discuss the challenges ahead.
Pokud jde o vztah k minulosti, tak nebudeme kličkovat a relativizovat, a budeme jasně opakovat to.
As far as the past is concerned, we should not sidestep issues, and we should clearly state that we distance ourselves from the abuse of power committed by the party in the past, to confirm that we are ready to protect private ownership, to say that we are not against the EU, but are ready to support EU integration and benefit from it, this and many other things.
This is not the first time that Mr. Dolejš has pushed for change, and previous attempts have been squashed by hardliners. We need to settle with the past, but the majority of our members think that opening up old wounds is not a good idea, Dolejš told Lidové Noviny. He and his supporters are viewed by many as rebels. In a party where the average age of members is close to 70 and many people have a communist history, the idea of settling with the past is not going to be well received. This week, the party closed ranks around one of its deputies, Josef Vondruška, when former political prisoners said he was one of the prison guards who had beaten them up in a communist jailhouse. Party chairman Vojtěch Filip himself is not above criticism. He was accused of cooperating with a former communist secret service, although a court ruled that he may not have been aware of what was happening. As a result, he is not eager to hold an extraordinary party conference, which could threaten his position. Party hardliners say that these attacks in the media are intended to damage the party before the local and Senate elections. But reformers such as Jiří Dolejš say the party has to be in a position to actively counter them. However, the pro-reform faction within the party is clearly in the minority, and at best, any reforms it manages to push through will be affected step by step rather than by leaps and bounds. Changing the party's name is not on Mr. Dolejš's agenda. He says he wants to change the content rather than the label.
I do not think that a name change is on the table. Our credibility will not rise if we paint over the name on our slate and remain the same on the inside, or even return to old practices.
Jiří Dolejš there, ending that report by Daniela Lazarová. Friday will see the start of an important annual road cycling race involving riders from 7 countries who will face a demanding 3-stage circuit linking the South Bohemian town of České Budějovice, Linz in Austria, and Passau in Germany. The event, known as the Peace and Friendship Race, has a long tradition, dating back to the 1960s, a time when Austria, East Germany, and Czechoslovakia were, of course, separated by the Iron Curtain. We spoke to Čestmír Kalaš, a former racer and now an organizer, who told us a bit about the race's history.
As young riders then, we took part in the race, but unfortunately, it didn't last long. 1968 saw the borders closed, and although we had ties with fellow racers in Austria, we were only able to pick up on them in the late 1980s, just 1 year before the Velvet Revolution. Against great odds, we were able to reintroduce the race, convincing officials in both Austria and here. It wasn't easy. I'm certain it was the only race in Europe where riders were able to freely cross the Iron Curtain. I still see it as an historic event.
In the 1990s, the race continued in a new spirit, with the Czech Republic emerging from the former Soviet bloc. Now the race is in its 19th inception. This year, České Budějovice-Linz race is featuring 23 teams, with more than 130 riders competing over 3 stages. The final one, the clincher, will be a pretty difficult climb, 14% in grade, some 9 kilometers in length. Čestmír Kalaš again.
Závěr na ten Wintersteiger, to je horské středisko a odpovídá to.
The final hill is similar to stages in the Tour de France. It's very difficult and real pro riding.
Těžká profesionální cyklistika. Strašný kopec.
But, says the race's president, Rudolf Lackner, the racers will be able to handle it, many of them at home, with world-class events like Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France. Still, he gives the Austrian teams a slight edge.
I'm a local patriot, and I think Ortner or Peter Pichler will be my favorite. But both, or only Ortner, is a hill climber, and I think he has chance to win.
Among the Czech teams competing, PSK Whirlpool and Dukla Prague will be strong contenders, with racers like René Anderlei and Petr Benčík or Milan Gadlec, who finished fifth on the track in Athens. Riding tough circuits is their bread and butter. Jan Gadlec, team manager for Dukla Prague.
For us, it's a final race in the season concerning the stage races, and we are preparing for the European Championship on the track, which will be held in the middle of October in Copenhagen. It's much more in the hills than before, very hard for all the riders, not only for mine. So I hope the riders will be able to ride well. And we can achieve some partial results in the first two stages. It will be very, very hard, but first two stages, I think we can do some goals.
The race will wrap up on Sunday in the Alpine Center of Hinterstoder in Upper Austria, 1,500 meters above sea level, and organizers expect that there will be many fans on hand to cheer the riders on. After the grueling climb, it can come down to anything, a nail-biting finish or a rider far ahead of the pack. Either way, it should be a memorable event. And you're tuned to Radio Prague, where it's now time for today's feature, which can be considered both a spotlight and a Czechs in history. Join Dita Asiadu as she's given a tour of the Mendel Museum in the Moravian capital of Brno. The museum is located in the Augustinian monastery, where Gregor Johann Mendel conducted his famous inheritance experiments, thanks to which he is known as the father of genetics. The monastery was home to Mendel from the age of 21 until his death in 1884.
My name is Iveta Šámalová. I am the museum manager, so I'm responsible for the guided tours, for that the visitors are feeling well in our museum. So we are in Mendel's museum in the Augustinian Abbey in Old Brno. In the Mendel Museum, there is exhibition which tried to introduce all activities in Mendel's life, so not only his famous experiment with bees, but as well his activities in mythology, beekeeping, and as well the life in the abbey, like general. So we are in this moment in one of the gardens of the Augustinian Abbey in Brno, and it's place where Mendel did his experiment with his bees. Today you can see there as well some plants where we are showing the Mendel's laws. So you have here red and white plants. If you cross the red plants with the white plants, you will receive from that in first generation just red plants, and then in the second generation you will see again red plants and white plants. So it's what Mendel did with bees. You have here as well other plants where it doesn't work according to those Mendel's laws, because for example some of those plants doesn't need fertilized. And so here used to be the experimental garden, and on this garden used to be as well Mendel's greenhouse, so you can still see there the foundations of the greenhouse. It was quite a huge building for that time, really very, very modern.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what it was like here in the 19th century, to give us an idea of the setting, of the atmosphere?
Mm-hmm. So here in Augustinian Monastery used to be a really intellectual center in 19th century, because we didn't have any university in Brno in that time, so all the education was really connected with Abbey and almost all the education. And so when Mendel entered the monastery at the age of 21, he found here very much support, because The abbot who was here when Mendel entered the monastery was himself very much interesting about hybridization and about agriculture and so on. And he said that it would be very useful if somebody could find out what is inherited and how is it inherited. So the idea was here already when Mendel entered the monastery.
Iste locus evangelicus fratres, ubi se Dominus dicit vitem et discipulos.
So now we are going into the exhibition in the Mendel Museum. As I already said, in Mendel's time it used to be a really intellectual center, so you can see here the modern scientific instruments. The Augustinians had here as well rich botanical collection, or so you can see there the herbary, or like didactic tools, because many of them were teachers. So you can see there, for example, one box where all parts of Pinus sylvestris are, or something what was used for demonstrating of different kinds of wood. Of course, the Augustinians had here as well huge library, so you can see here the handwritten catalog and as well some religious book. But in the library there used to be not only religious books, but as well books about natural science, social science, and so on.
This place was indeed an intellectual center. But what happened after the breakup of the Austro-Hungarian Empire?
The abbey was still very important in Brno, but of course later on when fascism started here, then they didn't like Augustinians, and as well after the Second World War in 1950, the abbey was abolished by communists. And in those places, used to be, for example, host for students or some machine constructing company. Later on, one part of Academy of Science, so it was already better, but definitely the order and the abbey didn't exist for 40 years. And only after the change of the regime in 1990, the Augustinians became the abbey back, and today they are again trying to like rebuild not only those buildings, but as well the place as intellectual center and center of spiritual life.
I noticed that there was a statue of Gregor Mendel outside, and there is some history to that as well. I believe it not always stood there.
Yes, so the statue was actually originally on Mendel Square, so in front of the abbey or in front of the garden. It was made in 1910, and scientists from all over the world gave money to this statue could be made. It was when Mendel was recognized as great scientist, so they wanted to make the statue for him. And then in 1950, the communists didn't like Mendel because he was friar, religious person, which was pretty bad. And second, they also didn't like Mendel's genetics because it was time of Lysenko, Michurin, so those scientists from Soviet Union who used to claim something completely else. So they wanted to destroy the statue of Mendel, but they didn't manage because the people hid it somewhere in the garden. So today it can be on that place where you saw it. What's quite funny, they somehow didn't notice that Mendel Square is also called after Mendel, and they never changed the name of the square.
I see here an audio visual presentation, or maybe just a visual presentation, of the actual experiment. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's really an introduction of the Mendel's experiments with bees. He did the experiments 9 years altogether. In that time, he was working like with 30,000 plants. He was observing 7 different traits. So in the presentation, you can see 2 of them, the color of seeds and the shape of seeds. And you can see there as well with how many seeds he was dealing. So for one of those traits, it was over 8,000 of seeds. For another one, it was over 7,000. And so pretty much.
In 1865, when he actually made that discovery, how popular was it at the time?
In his time, Mendel's experiments were not recognized at all. The people knew him as teacher, as meteorologist, as beekeeper, later on as well as abbot, or he was as well president of local mortgage bank and so on. But almost nobody knew about his experiments because nobody understood them, because he was using by evaluation like statistic and mathematics. And nobody from the biologists understood that in that time. So he was recognized much later, only in 19 or in the beginning of 20th century.
Mediator Dei et hominum homo Christus Jesus,
Unius qui per nature sunt vitis et palmites, proter quod Deus cum esset.
So in this moment we are in so-called Mendel's refectory. So this room used to be the dining room of the Augustinians in Mendel's time, so Mendel was eating here. It's Baroque space from the end of 18th century, but the decoration on the walls is only from the beginning of 20th century, so Mendel didn't see decorated like that.
And the decoration on the wall, what is it portraying?
The front part you can see it's the Saint Augustine, then this is the Basilica of Assumption of Our Lady, it's a church which belongs to this monastery, and then there are like Augustinians. In 1965, first genetic conference during the communism took place here in Brno, and they made as well small exhibition about Mendel just in this Mendel's refectory. But it was possible to speak about Mendel only as about scientist, not as about priest or whatever. And in the front part, you can see clearly religious motif. So St. Augustine, church. So to hide it, they made a wall in front of this motif. And Mendel was really presented only as scientist. And if accidentally somebody came across the fact that he was priest as well, then they used to interpret it like that, yes, he was priest, and he was very unhappy in the dark church, so that is why he was running away to the brightness of the science.
And Spotlight brings us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. If you feel like commenting on anything you've heard in today's show, or if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch. You can write us a letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, Czech Republic, or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Linda Maštalíš, and everyone here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us. Goodbye, and take care.